here at Deuteronomy care about endangered species. And what species is more endangered than the mutant ninja turtle? There are only four in existence.
Seven.
That we know of.
Seven.
Well, depending on what world you're talking about, there could be a little bit more or a little bit less. But needless to say, they are endangered and we need to help them. And this episode might be the one that shows us how. I'm Dan.
And I'm Brian.
And this is Deuteronomy. We watched Season 3, Episode 17, Turtles, Turtles Everywhere.
Originally broadcast on October 17th, 1989, written by David Karen and J. Larry Carroll. And as always, directed by Bill Wolf. I don't think we've gotten work from these guys before. Did you recognize those names?
No, they're newer to TMNT. I did look them up. It seems like they're like a writing team. They've done a bunch of things together. Most notably, they did 65 episodes of the Dennis the Menace cartoon and 19 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Oh, I love that Dennis the Menace cartoon. I remember that one.
Wait, yeah, that seems to be their big thing.
The U.S. one, right? Not the U.K. one.
I think so, yeah.
It's another one of those weird things in entertainment. There's two completely different characters named Dennis the Menace, and neither one owns a trademark.
Yeah, no, it's the American one. Their resume is really interesting, I think, because they have a whole bunch of series that they wrote, like, two episodes, four episodes, three episodes, like, where they were not, like, the major contributors, but they came in for a couple episodes or something like that. And I'm talking, like, they did He-Man, they did the Phantom 2040, or was it 4020? Whatever, you know what I'm talking about.
2040. Which is a fast approaching and completely takes some mysticism out of future tech.
It's true, yeah. But yeah, they did all these like one-off for a bunch of animated series in the 80s and 90s. And then like also one of them was the editor for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And then they transitioned to live action TV, like writing still. And they did like a ton of horror.
I mean, I guess that's not completely off base. You know, the Turtles have their gross out foundation, the monster movie foundation. So I guess they're in the right company. It is interesting how different their careers turned.
Right.
And
yeah.
how much variety there was to it.
A lot of the writers that we've seen so far have been like very almost exclusively animated writing work. And a lot of them like, oh, I got my start on this episode and then like took this show over and did like 20, 30, 40 episodes or something. And clearly that happened for them too. Like, you know, they did the Dennis the Menace cartoon for 65 episodes, like I said. That's a pretty great run for a writer. It's just very interesting to see them transition from like all these like kids animated cartoons to horror.
I mean, everybody's got to mix it up sooner or later, right? Everything gets stale after a while. It does show, like, I think we've got some good notes in the writing on this episode. Not perfect, but it does kind of feel like they did a little script doctoring and really kind of pushed the personality of the boys in this one. We'll touch on that a little bit more, but until then, let's jump right into the beginning of the episode. We open with the Channel 6 crew, April, Vernon, and a bunch of scab crew that we've never noticed before. They're reporting on the garbage dump of the future.
They go from having four employees, well, I guess they had more employees in like the first and second season, to just the core people that we've, you know, like the Vernon, Irma, April, and Vern. Why did they do that to me? Burn and Vernon.
All I can think of is Ernest. Remember, like, Ernest Scared Stupid? Burn, 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 burn.
Oh, hi, Vern. Vern? Vern, Vern. Good morning, Vern. Burn. Heck, Vern, time don't mean nothing to a pig. Know what I mean?
But now, yeah, this is like these random, like, huge crew come out of nowhere. I wonder if they're just from a different channel.
They're scabs. They're just scabs.
Can they be scabs? They didn't have other employees.
That's a good point. But anyways, the garbage dump of the future, a.k.a. New Jersey. Shredder's got Bebop and Rocksteady tailing them for shits and giggles. I really like Bebop's line here, though, when he rings Shredder on the communicator to check in.
Hey, boss, this is me calling, Bebop.
And I always thought you were Santa Claus.
I also want to add bonus points to Bebop's complete non-reaction to bitchy Shredder trying to make fun of him.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be common, right?
Yeah, he's just like, here he goes again. over at the lair, Michelangelo and Splinter are watching TV when this April's report comes on. Mikey's all sort of extra in this episode and does a backflip off of his seat to call his brothers in to watch the TV. However, the rest of the boys are being actual teenagers in this moment and sleeping through the day. Even Leonardo, which kind of feels weird and out of character for him. Why is Mikey the overachiever hanging out with Dad while the rest of the brothers are being total bums?
Why is Mikey sitting on like a bathroom stool instead of the open couch?
Splinter called dibs.
You know, Splinter's in his armchair.
Do you not know how dibs works?
What, you can't sit anywhere else?
Even if he's not sitting in it, if Splinter called dibs, Mikey can't use it.
Oh, okay. Okay, so he sat in the armchair and called dibs on the couch.
This was clearly Dad's living room time. Michelangelo was just participating. I also think it's really cute that the turtles never miss April's report. Like, it's the center point of their day. Like, I know they're probably using it to skim for crime, but in my headcanon, they're just really supportive friends.
I mean, yeah, Mikey does wake everybody up being like, it's April's broadcast!
Ninja kicked a damn rabbit. buckle up for garbage puns, because there's a few.
Yeah, the whole lair is just a pigsty. It's super messy. I don't really believe that Splinter would let it get this bad, but here we are.
If he's really enthralled in his stories, he has no idea what's going on around him. He's completely tuned out. He does acknowledge it, though. Like, after Michelangelo slips on some discarded pizza and then crashes into a mountain of soda cans, Raph also compares Michelangelo's choice of pizza toppings to garbage, so we're all on brand here.
It's funny that, you know, they live in a sewer and they have this much garbage on the floor. Like, ants is the last thing they have to worry about.
Yeah, I'm big more concerned about all the fecal matter. So on the TV, April showcases a fleet of automated self-driving robot garbage trucks, and fuck you, Elon, Turtles did it first.
Uh-oh, Simpsons did it. Don't have a...
Cowabunga!
Man.
And it leaves her breathless.
What do you mean?
She literally says, it has left me breathless. Like she is unnaturally excited about automated garbage trucks.
Okay, she's got a weird relationship with smart robots, and we'll talk a little bit more about this later in the episode.
It's true.
So seeing this report motivates Leonardo to recruit everyone in an effort to clean up the lair, because it's a pigsty. It looks like a bunch of animals live here. And before we cut to the next scene, April winks at the camera, which causes Splinter to trip out a bit. He says he needs to stop having late night sushi snacks. And yeah, those omega-3 fatty acids would do a number on your dreams.
I love the face that he gives, though, because, you know, like, I don't know, people talk out loud sometimes to themselves. He wasn't expecting an answer from the television.
But she's given so many in the past. They should be used to it by now. So the robot trucks and subsequent processing center all operate with big robot arms instead of mechanisms. We've talked about this as like a hallmark to the series, and honestly, a lot of robot depictions in entertainment, they get humanized with human features instead of just being like gears and wheels. They got arms that move around, but no Mickey Mouse gloves this time, and I was a little disappointed. However, to make up for it, they have a giant eye on a robot tentacle thing that can talk to you, and I hate it.
A la Jabba's palace door.
Yes, that's immediately what my mind went to. His name is the Dump 1000, and he's voiced by Rob Paulsen.
Just call me Dump 1000.
Is a line that is actually said in this episode.
Might be one of the better lines. Dump is benevolent, though, as they rescue Vernon from getting brave little toastered after he falls into a garbage pile and starts getting taken down the conveyor belt.
Benevolent,
but
sassy. He calls him garbage.
Very sassy. Meanwhile, Bebop and Rocksteady have snuck into the recycling center, winding up in a room with, and I quote, lots of buttons and pretty lights and stuff.
Excellent. The main control room.
And I want to rip this for oversimplifying, but yeah, that That's it. That's basically it.
Yeah. Should we talk now or later about the pipe they had dropped down to get to the control room?
Oh, let's 100% talk about it right now, because this recycling center decided that they do not need stairs or doors, and everything just has slides and tubes.
There's a conveyor belt that leads to this tube, and all episode, Bebop, Rocksteady, and the Shredder, and then later April and the Turtles, all slide down this tube to get to the main control center. However, later on, very later on in the episode, there is also a shot of Bebop and Rocksteady getting stuck in the processes of, like, garbage collection. Like, they should have been crushed to death, but instead they get neatly packaged in a cube of garbage, which goes to this same tube!
Yeah, why does the tube dump out in the control room?
Like, again, it's automated, but, like, what? Why does the garbage go there?
If it's automated, then somebody really fucked up the base level programming. Because it's dumping the garbage it's processing on its operator. And everyone just seems okay with it.
Like, no one calls this out. There's not a single lampshade moment of it. It just happens.
That's just modern. That's just modern living, baby. Everybody's got tubes now. I don't really understand either why Shredder decided to send Bebop and Rocksteady on their own to scout out this recycling center. Like, they find the control room and Shredder's just like, wait there. And you know he's just gonna fucking drill up through the basement as always.
Yep.
So, like, what was even the point in having the least stealthiest guys go siphon filter here?
Yeah.
Why are they there?
I love the scene of them being stealthy because Rocksteady is still, like, he's tiptoeing and he's still going the...
Like, he's also tiptoeing in combat boots.
Like, making rhino noises.
Shredder exposits to Krang that he's going to hijack the robot trash trucks to collect turtles instead of garbage. And meanwhile, Baxter Stockman is calling his lawyer.
Right, it's just the Mouser episode.
It's exactly the Mouser episode, except instead of little robot mouse traps hunting Splinter, it's big robot garbage trucks hunting the turtles. It's the same plot.
We're only 35 episodes in, and they're already repeating themselves.
That's good recycling. That's what the entire message of this episode is about, Dan. Krang provides Shredder with a device that he, quote, just happens to have, that can override the Robotruck control computer. It's naturally in the shape of a small turtle, or more accurately, those turtle-shaped sandboxes we all had as kids.
Yeah!
All I could think of when I looked at that thing. Why is Krang designing the tech? Why is it... I mean, everything he's stolen in the past wasn't frivolous in design, but once he gets behind a soldering iron, oh, what, he's just got to make it kitschy?
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of funny. It's like, oh, yeah, I made this. It's shaped like our enemies.
Why?
Like he went to, like, a late-night pottery class and just decided to turn it into a machine.
I like that. and in another classic Krangism to take us out after Shredder compliments him for being one step ahead in planning for this override. Yes, and that's not easy for someone with no feet.
I feel like my favorite pastime of the show is commenting on how just fucking weird Krang's body is. There's a shot of him sitting in the seat, and my God, his knees are so uncomfortable. I don't want to look at them.
Time code?
It's, like, 525. Like, once again, the proportions of the body are so weird. His arm is like a foot long.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the way he's sitting, that's a nut squisher.
And his knees look like eyeballs. He looks so weird.
Well, the whole thing with his body having, like, folds and flaps and, like, vents and... It has a double chin for... It's a robot with a double chin, Dan. But yeah, the way he's sitting, like, with his short arms just, like, sticking out. Like, his hands come down to about the elbows. But the way he's got his knees pressed together is like, I can just, I feel my cojones screaming at that. But then again, he doesn't have those.
This is going to be my segment of the show. It's like, let's just laugh at Krang's body. I'm going to body shame the robot.
Just going to say I should make a jingle for body shaming Krang.
No, not Craig. Specifically his robot.
But, I mean, the robot doesn't have its own name. It's just Krang's android body.
Just Krang's body.
We can body shame Krang, too. No, we can't. He doesn't have one.
Yeah, he's just a brain.
We can brain shame Krang. We use our turtle power to clean and scour. We got a brief cleaning montage in the next few seconds. TMNT tidying up the lair, using ninja skills and jumping around and shit. Not much to report here, just kind of fun to watch.
I just gotta say, we're like 6 minutes into the episode at this point, and the turtles are just cleaning their house.
Yeah, this was a surprisingly slow-paced episode. Like, it hits the jet engines at the end, but... Until then, like, it was actually took a long time for the true plan to kind of materialize in this one. Back at the recycling center, April once again has jeopardized her career by interviewing an inanimate object. So this is what we wanted to talk about. She's got this thing. She interviewed Mac. She's interviewed Dump 1000, and like proudly too.
Yep.
She's like, thanks so much. This is going to be great for my career. What is it with her trying to talk to machines and justify it as actual journalism?
I mean. To be fair, they are like artificial intelligence most of the time.
But it's still artificial. Can you name a single news person who has actually interviewed a robot?
Yeah, the guy who wrote the New York Times article where he just talked to ChatGPT for an hour.
Ew.
That was a real article. And he came out of it saying that he thought it was sentient. So, yeah, real journalists can make mistakes too.
I take it back then. Roll it back. I did laugh out loud, though, when April asked about Vernon and Dump 1000 says, I had him dry cleaned, at which point Vernon just kind of stumbles out of an open garage door covered in steam.
Yeah, it's like the car wash for the trucks or something, and he got forced through.
It was a great execution. Just no notes.
Yep, wouldn't change a thing. Dump 1000 has another great line when he finds Bebop and Rocksteady as intruders. He says, armed reaction, and it's all arms.
Yeah, that's been the recurring motif in this episode, and it keeps going, too. It's just like robot arms appear out of nowhere. But these ones had the Mickey Mouse gloves.
Yep, yeah.
I think they reserve them for situations where we have to do soft handling, you know. And just like I said, Shredder bores up through the fucking floor just in time to rescue his goons, slaps the little turtle disruptor on the control panel, and the Eye of Sauron is now his to command, which the genius phrases as, quote, Shredder says, seize turtles wherever they are.
Yep. Get me turtles. Get me the turtles.
He doesn't say the. It's just seize turtles wherever they are. Shredder, honey, baby, booby.
Well, I mean, like he repeats the command a couple of times, right?
And the robot still misinterprets it. Details, my guy.
The
details.
AI was like just put online. It doesn't know what the TMNT are.
This is proof the AI is not absolute. It's all about interpretation. You need specific. Okay, this is an if then then that kind of scenario. Have you ever coded? Have you ever worked in Python or C++? You fucking moron, you metal faced jackass. You need specific parameters here. You can't just ask for something. This is going to lead to hijinks, such as the trucks raiding the city's zoos and pet stores for every single turtle in the tri-state area.
See, it's not true artificial intelligence, it just predicts the next most logical thing according to its information set, and it didn't have a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles programmed into its data set.
If you had just put the three other adjectives in front of that, the robot would have had this episode over with in like 30 seconds. But no, Shredder, you gotta leave it in vagaries.
Yeah, Krang literally says the full name like 2 minutes later.
But not to the robot.
Well, not to the robot, but I mean, he wouldn't. He would just use it to scold Shredder, as he does.
if the robot had... Oh, you wanted the teenage bipedal amorphous ones. Oh, okay, I can go get those. But no, he just said fucking turtles, you dumbass. And that segues us into our first commercial break, and we'll be back right after these messages.
It's sky offers much beauty, but it can also be dangerous.
Those pigeons, right?
No, Raphael. The Earth has something called the ozone layer that acts like an umbrella to protect us from the harmful rays of the sun. But it's getting thinner because of man-made chemicals.
Yeah, too much of the sun's ultraviolet rays can get through and hurt plants and people.
But what can we do about it?
Stop using stuff that hurts the ozone layer, like spray paints and foam cups.
So who brought foam cups?
And we're back.
Something I forgot to mention before the break. When I said Shredder slaps the turtle disruptor on the control panel, I meant literally just that. He just drops it on top of the console. And you know what that means, right, Dan?
He broke it? I don't know.
Wireless charging. Turtles did it first!
Uh-oh, Simpsons did it. Simpsons did it. Don't have a...
Cowabunga!
Man.
On a roll today.
When you said he slaps the thing on top, all I could think of is this AI can find so many turtles.
We can fit so much TCRI mutagen in this baby. And the recycling center, it's quickly filling up with turtles. Okay, Krang, do something. Krang's just like, wait it out, baby.
No.
They'll figure it out eventually.
Yeah, it's a learning algorithm.
These things take time. How long?
Oh.
And then Shredder says the thing. Turtles everywhere.
And not a blasted ninja among them.
No!
I do like that the turtles, not the Ninja Turtles, but just the regular old turtles, keep attacking Shredder.
Oh, yeah. That's been the running joke, how they keep biting him and stamping on his foot and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, the big like tortoise that they took from the zoo steps on his foot, and we get another amazing like 10 seconds of James Avery just going, ow, 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 ow.
Ow, ouch, ouch, ooh.
So back at the lair, the boys have finished cleaning, and the word has gotten out and around about the turtle napping that's happening around the city. So April calls them to check in, see how they are, and warn them. And she, as always, closes her conversation on the turtle com with, ciao. Ciao is such a quintessential 80s thing. Does anybody really say that shit anymore?
I mean, like, Italians do.
That doesn't count. Nobody cares.
If this were a video, there would be a small disclaimer at the bottom of the video.
I apologize to all the Italians out there. I don't care. Ciao. Splinter's concerned too, but Don dismantles the fourth wall right in front of him to put his mind at ease. We're heroes in a half shell.
Remember the theme song?
Yep. There's a lot of fourth wall breaking in this episode.
Yeah, we're going to tally them at the end. So our heroes are off in the party wagon. Mike provides a terrible role model to kids as he tosses mm-hmm. his gum wrapper out the window. But it makes for a pretty badass transition shot to the robot hand coming in from off screen to scoop up the wrapper and close in on the party wagon as the truck's driving up the street behind them. I got to appreciate the little cinematic moments like that. Every once in a while, they do something visually really cool.
Yeah, that whole scene is pretty fun to watch. There's that moment with the arm tentacles. There's the gunner position coming out of the van again. And I had a hard time remembering. Was this it's not the first time they've used the door, but is this the first time that we saw the cannon?
I think it's the first time we've seen this cat. Like, it changes, right? It depends on the animation. Yeah. But we've seen the gunner seat before. And also, bonus points. Anytime the gunner seat comes out, it will save an episode from absolution.
Yeah, use that every
that
time.
Cool. Yeah, you could write the crappiest episode of Turtles in history, and if Michelangelo leans out the seat and shoots a cannon, like, okay, we're back in business, baby.
You know what my favorite part about the party wagon is?
What?
Is the toy and how out of the sidecar, like the gunner position, would just drop out torpedoes?
Oh, like, yeah, just like drop them like mines on the street.
Yeah, why do they never have live torpedoes in the animated show?
That's a good question. I mean, there's so much disconnect. There's a surprising amount of disconnect between the toys and the franchise itself. Ace Duck. How many characters did we see made in the toys that never even show up in the goddamn show?
Yeah.
Put a bomber jacket on anything, call it a mutant, done. So yeah, Donnie uses the gunner seat to blow up the truck that's tailing them.
You gotta call out how pissed off the other brothers are at Mikey for littering.
What do you mean?
Just like the 11:13 mark, there's just a shot of the three brothers after Mikey says, like, oh, it's all my fault, guys, I littered. They're just so mad at him.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it cut away so quick, I didn't really pay attention to it the first time, but yeah, they are pissed. So we cut to April. She's shooting a report on the beach with a bunch of world-renowned turtleologists awaiting a rare sea turtle nesting. FYI, the actual turtle experts in the real world are known as herpetologists or chelonologists, or kelonologists. I'm not sure how to pronounce that one. Or more broadly, a zoologist. There's no such thing as a turtleologist.
Shame.
So the turtleologists are excited because the last single turtle of the species, known as Galapagos turtleopolis, are going to lay her eggs. Anybody see what's wrong with this here?
If she was the last living, how did the eggs get inseminated?
Ding. So you guessed it. A truck pulls up and yoinks the mama sea turtle. April goes beast mode for a sec, though, grabs the arm trying to save the turtle because she doesn't want them to go extinct. Too late, sweetheart. And she gets lobbed into the truck as well.
They had a prime directive, and they will not lose sight of it.
Directive. April calls the turtles. Hey, turtles, come rescue me. Leo, we turtles will rescue you. Me. Looks like the turtles are going to rescue her. Did he really have to phrase it that way?
He said it so awkwardly.
He said it so earnestly. We turtles will rescue you. I just wanted, like, that cut back to April on the phone being like, yeah, that's why I fucking called.
She does get sarcastic like that later on.
Later on. That's true. The van proceeds to weave around rolling hills that apparently exist in Manhattan now. That always just kind of blows my mind that they just, like, why? Why? You're not getting anything about having the van go up and down over an arcing hill. Those don't exist in this zip code anywhere. Can we also talk about the turtles' bad driving practices real quick?
Sure.
So nobody wears seatbelts. We got 4 to 5 across the front seat sometimes.
Yep.
Some of them are just standing in the back, sparring or practicing in the back while in motion. Untethered weapons, and maybe most egregiously, they never stay seated. They're always moving. 30 seconds ago, Leonardo was driving the party wagon. Somewhere along the line, he swapped seats with Mikey, who is driving now, in the last, like, 30 to 20 seconds.
I just noticed that there's, like, a full wall separating the front, like, where, like the driving section from the rest of the van.
That's less of a full wall and more of a, we forgot to draw back there. And that's okay. That's a lot of background detail to wedge in for an over-the-shoulder shot. I get it. Budget. And then we get another really great fourth wall break from Mikey as they speed off, as the fight theme plays in the background.
Whoa, isn't this music excellent?
Yes, Michelangelo. Yes, it is.
It was like they had a quota to fill and they need to do it this episode.
Oh, there was a surplus, Daniel. Let's talk about Shredder. He's really not having a good time today. He's not. This was his plan, and it is falling apart at the seams.
He's almost like knee deep in turtles at one point.
Yeah, he's got all these turtles all over the place, almost drowning in them. And now his greatest enemy, the Free Press, lands in his lap after the collection truck drops off April and the sea turtle and Nab from the beach. He and Bebop and Rocksteady keep getting bit and accosted by the veritable dog pile of turtles amassing, all because he's a bad manager and fails to give good direction.
I love that this one...
It is time to resign.
This one turtle just gets passed back and forth between all three of them, biting whoever comes in range.
The goat.
I just wrote, pratfalls. Pratfalls as far as the eye can see.
We're out in front of the recycling facility. The TMNT are plotting how they're going to proceed. Donnie's got a great-ish, legit-ish plan to hack into the central computer using a payphone. Now, that's interesting. It's interesting because it's doable.
You see, kids, before fiber optic internet, we had to use phone lines. And before cell phones, there were phones connected to the wall.
And in all fairness, the actual internet has not fully been acknowledged yet in this show. Like, it's not really a thing. Donnie's just that good with technology.
Yeah, Turtles did it first again.
14 minutes and 10 seconds. You're too late, Donatello. Another superhero already holds a patent on telephone booths.
Nice. I like it.
I like it a lot. He gets got by a passing truck, though, and we cut to the last commercial break in the episode, but not before our third, fourth wall break. And I swear to God, that's got to be a record, right? Leo says, what a terrible development. And Raph says,
yeah, but what a great cliffhanger.
Is it the third one? Do you count April winking because she breaks the fourth wall in universe?
No, a fourth wall in universe is not the fourth wall. It's not. The fourth wall phases us.
Because Splinter broke the fourth wall.
Splinter broke the fourth wall. Yeah, okay, fair enough.
I got one more thing about this scene, though.
Go for it.
The turtles get out of their van, a van which is shaped like a turtle, designed to look like a turtle.
There you go.
And are standing on the sidewalk maybe 100 feet away from the facility that all the trucks are going in and out of. And not a single truck sees those turtles until
Donatello sequesters himself into a phone booth.
Right.
They know how to pick their targets. It's good strategy.
It's to cross right in front of them.
He's vulnerable now. It's smart, though. Like, they know. Maybe the trucks are AI smart enough to know that they can fight, and they know that this guy disarmed in a glass box. He's easy. Easy target. Low-hanging fruit. Donatello's trapped in a phone booth. Bebop and Rocksteady toss Donatello down the tube into the main control room. Just can't get over that's the primary mode for transit in this building. There's been no regard for turtle safety in this episode. Let me just voice the distaste I have for this. Like, when they're biting Shredder and Bebop, those dudes are just throwing that turtle around. You talked about how they passed him around, but
yeah.
They're also been crawling on garbage. Like, all of them have been loaded into active used garbage trucks, crawling over bacteria, manhandled by robots. And then when the phone booth comes down with Donatello inside, it just plows into a pile of turtles, sending them scattering all over the place, probably crushing and killing several in the process. I mean, geez.
Yep. They're real bad guys. What can we say?
But that was Donatello. Donatello inadvertently killed his ancestors.
Well, I mean, he was locked in a phone booth. He didn't have a choice.
He would have been more horrified, I would have thought. But now Shredder is all stoked on the trucks working finally because one of the turtles has shown up on his doorstep. But Krang is now getting impatient. A total flip of personalities in this. One turtle isn't good enough. Shredder says, when they come to rescue him, they'll be captured too. Then I'll be invincible. And then we just get this world-class delivery by Barry/Donnie here.
What a cornball. Who writes that guy's dialogue anyway?
Magnificent. Magnificent meta self-deprecation from the writer's room. Fourth wall break number 4. Outstanding. Moving on.
Immediately followed up by April also breaking the fourth wall.
How so?
Because she overhears Donnie respond to Shredder like he threatens Shredder like as a comeback, and then she goes where he complains about Shredder's corny dialogue.
Oh yeah, that's right. But I mean, she kind of says that to herself.
And she's speaking out loud.
Fair enough.
This is another thing I want to point out before we get to the climax of the episode. How big is this control room? Because I'm pretty sure the dimensions of it have changed about 7 times.
Oh, yeah. There's no concept for... I mean, the control panel itself looks different from when it was first introduced.
It's so funny to me that, like, every time they come in the room, it's like, yeah, they're right next to each other. And then, like, Shredder, Bebop, and Rocksteady are getting beat... Like, they're getting bitten by a turtle and throwing it back and forth, and suddenly they're on, like, a fucking football field.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of looks like it was a recycled Technodrome asset, to be honest.
Yeah, that's true.
I like that April is the only sympathetic character in this episode, as she actually cares about the mama sea turtle getting back to lay her eggs.
Yeah.
But outside in the turtle van, they launched the grappling hooks out of the back so the turtles can scale the building. The scaling the building thing, that was never in the comics, really. Like, the turtles lived in New York, and we'd see them bomb around the city, maybe do a little parkour here and there. But the Toon was the one that really took notes from the Adam West Batman series and was like, oh, well, superheroes climb buildings when they can't fly. That's just what they do. So turtles are constantly climbing skyscrapers in the middle of Manhattan. That'll work.
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of weird, although I gotta say, like, there's just something iconic of the turtles running across rooftops.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I'm just saying, like, the grappling hook thing, that's never been revisited.
Yeah.
We little bits of climbing claws in IDW and 2K3 and even 2012, little bits, but no full-on, like, let's throw a rope 40 stories in the air and then walk up the side of a building.
Don't worry, because we get a nice little Looney Tunes moment here where...
Oh, I love this so much.
They're climbing up, and Mikey and Raph get captured by hands that appear out on the outside of the building. They can truly come from anywhere.
Reminder, this is a recycling center.
Yep.
And they outfitted it with defensive robot arms. That's all.
Leo climbs up and takes out his swords and cuts the arms away to free his brothers, but also accidentally cuts their climbing ropes. And Mikey and Raph are just floating in the sky.
For like a good like 4 or 5 seconds.
Yep. Like a solid beat before Raph goes like, oh, cool, you cut our climbing gear too. And then they fall.
It was a half step away from like Wile E. Coyote looking down, realizing he's over a cliff, and then waving at the camera. Like, it was right there. It was right there.
It's pretty funny. It's a 1650.
So their original plan is out, but leader Leo has another brilliant move up his sleeve. I smell a disguise coming, says Raph. I'm going to go ahead and count this as a half fourth wall break because we were all thinking it.
Yeah.
The costumes this time around are trenchies with hard hats, clipboards, and name tags. No mask, no pants, no shoes.
There's something about this that just feels so Ghostbusters to me.
Like Ghostbusters 2 when they rip up the street to find the river of slime in the sewer below.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's exactly what I thought too. But I'm also always thinking about Ghostbusters 2. Moving on. Dump 1000 asks for a password, and Raph channels his best Treasure of the Sierra Leone.
Password? We don't need no stinking password.
Oh, that was the password.
This is the point where... Have you ever seen the Smells Like Ass Vine? There was like a reality show where people have to like be in a completely black room and smell things and then try to identify them. Peak American television. But there's one where a guy like leans in and you go, smells like ass. And then the bell just goes, correct. Because he literally shoved his nose into like a random person's ass crack that was paid to sit there. And he smelled this person's ass. And it's a, hang on, I have to find, because like the visual on it is unbelievable.
That smells like ass. Nailed it!
The slow motion music, that's a really excellent addition.
The look on his face kills me every time. It's killed me for years.
I think my favorite part might be him saying, I know this smell. Like, I'm sorry, dude. I mean, whatever, to each their own, sure.
So yeah, stinking is the correct word to get in. Another one of those weird side things in character design I've always wanted to talk about. So in different turtle iterations, they carry their weapons differently on their body, right? So like the OG figures all have little pockets or sockets for size and swords to kind of slot into. We've seen Leo with swords crossed X over his back so that he can reach up with two hands and pull them off from opposite shoulders. We've seen them seated both diagonally over one shoulder. We've seen him on his hip. Raph is carried his size on his back, on his hip, usually just tucked in, or like in the movie, they're tied in. You see he's got little strings holding him onto his belt. Mikey's had several different pouches and pockets to hold his nunchucks, but for the most part in 87, they just straight up tucked their weapons into the belts. The belts are just straight up belts, no shoulder belts or any of that stuff, and they just kind of like tuck stuff into it, no formality. But in this, I notice there's a shot from behind, and you can see that Michelangelo's nunchucks are tucked into his belt upside down on his shell with chains hanging below. Yep. Is that weird? Like, how much thought do you think went into efficient weapon retrieval when considering these facets?
I mean, it's definitely weird. It looks like it shouldn't work.
But does he just, like, reach his thumbs back and, like, hook the chains and then pull out that way? That just seems inefficient.
Mikey's a magician when it comes to his nunchucks, so he could probably make it work no matter what orientation they are. But, yeah, I mean, I would see I know I would grab the chain with my hand, but that's not exactly fighting style for those things, so.
No, I don't know. It just seemed weird they were upside down like that.
Also, like, wouldn't it make this really annoying clack sound on his shell? Do you think he gets annoyed by that when he's walking around?
As a guy who's had his keychain stuck to his belt loop for the last 15 years, nah. Back to the episode, closing in on the end. Turtles encounter Bebop and Rocksteady, toss them in the compactor, and they get squished into cubes of garbage.
Yeah.
I guess that's a recurring theme, because, I mean, the same thing technically happened to Shredder in the first movie. And then they get deposited into the tube chute slide thing that we talked about that leads them straight back into the control room, crashing in the shredder. Why is the automated trash machine dumping its product into the control room again? We do not have an answer to this.
Gotta say, mildly disappointed in our heroes for not even attempting to save Bebop and Rocksteady.
Why would they? They're the bad guys.
I mean, I feel like in the 87 one, they would. Any other iteration, they'd be like, nah.
There wasn't enough time. Like we said, we can't really fathom the scale of the rooms that they're in because
that's true.
We never get an establishing wide shot. So maybe they're like 100 feet away. Who knows? Leo, Mike, and Raph continue looking for their brother, who's apparently developed clairvoyance. And he says, I sense the other turtles are nearby.
Yeah, right. Come on, Donnie. That's not your thing. That's Leo's.
What? Why? Why did we even need that moment?
I'm just joking. Donnie, in various iterations, Donnie is the one who has a hard time with the more spiritual side of the TMNT, so I don't think he would be the one having premonitions.
Not at all. Dump 1000 grabs and tosses them down into a tube. They land on Shredder. Dude may have been onto something, leaving his armor on 24/7, because everybody's just bodying him today. But again, they're also just kind of laying on top of these poor, innocent pet shop turtles, so.
Think about how complicated the install must have been for this place to have all the different ways that those arms can come out and grab things.
They're like nanite technology, right? They come out of fucking anywhere. There's not like predetermined plates where the arms are accessible. They're just like T-1000 out of the fucking wall.
Right.
The robot hands grab the brother trio again. Shredder revels in finally capturing the turtles. But this is like the 14th or 15th time, dude, so maybe take it down a notch. The sea turtle bites through April's ropes that she was tied up with. We might have forgotten to mention that April has been tied up, but we should all be able to assume at this point in the series that that's what happens. And then the sea turtle also bites through the chain, the metal chain that was holding Donatello in the phone booth.
Yeah.
Bit of a stretch.
How about that?
I mean, snapping turtles can take your finger off, but I don't know about metal.
This is this is what made me think of the whole, like, what size is this room? Because somehow Shredder, Bebop, and Rocksteady did not notice April and Donatello get up and quite plainly walk over to where the override turtle is and remove it from the computer.
The room must have been massive, and they just didn't have the time or budget to like fully encompass it in the episode or something. Because, yeah, everything here is just like alluding to a massive room with lots of action going on. They're not on top of each other. They're completely unaware of what's happening in their vicinity.
It's so funny because, like, when they give you long shots of the room, it looks like it's like 4 foot wide.
Yeah.
But like 40 feet long, I guess.
But Donatello does get free. He starts clearing the rogue turtles off the control panel and inadvertently rips the disruptor remote that was so cleverly disguised as a turtle and frees Dump 1000.
April does it.
Fucking yike. Yeah, okay, you got me. But it's still a yikes moment out of, like, sheer plot convenience.
Oh, yeah.
Dump 1000 then tosses Bebop, Rocksteady, and Shredder back into their drill module and then whack-a-moles them back down their hole.
Like, the fact that they remove the thing from the computer and it just dies.
Yeah, instant disconnect. No range at L on that key charger. In the epilogue, Dump 1000 vows to return the zoo and pet shop turtles while the TMNT and April take Mama Sea Turtle back to the beach to finish nesting and laying her eggs. Mikey gets weepy and sentimental about his mom, who has canonically never been introduced in the series, and then they're all off to make pizza with garbage. The end.
So, couple beats in this last part. When Dump 1000 beats up Shredder and knocks the drill module down back into the center of the earth, all the different arms form into one giant fist.
That was pretty dope.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. And yeah, man, we get like a really interesting character beat here with Mikey being like, oh, it reminds me of my mom. Pre-mutation? You have that memory?
No, he doesn't.
This is the first we're learning of it. And I'm like, this will never be mentioned again.
That sea turtle looked nothing like Tang Shen. So what's our rating? I'm going to give this one a Chev Excellent, somewhere between Chevy Nova and Excellent. We got some solid lols, but the repeat scheme and the recurring theme of animal abuse just didn't sit right with me.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's not a cowabunga. I think for me, the pacing in this series has been so interesting, and after, like, 2.5 seasons of breakneck speed to get an episode where they basically do nothing for half of it was like, this is weird.
It's watchable.
Yeah, it is. Like, it's, I will say this, like, the episode is, it's well written. I think in its own way, it's paced very well. It's just so different from what we've gotten before that it's sort of like a shock in juxtaposition. But yeah, it's fun. It's not bad. It's not the best that we've had, but it falls somewhere in that middle point.
It's fun. It's well paced and easy to watch, but there are really no significant stakes.
Easy to watch, I think, is a really great like description of it, because
yeah,
there's like, it's a thing you've seen them do before. It's very comfortable. They sort of raise the stakes a little bit with the introduction of the endangered turtle. But yeah, it's there.
What is our moral? What is a lesson that we still learn here?
Be specific when you're programming language for an AI.
I just said don't litter. Kind of felt like that was the PSA at the end here.
Yeah. I mean, definitely pick up your trash, but automation is bad? I don't know.
I mean, we're learning that hard right now. Before we let you go, we're going to give you your weekly pizza affirmation, and, well...
Captain Planet, he's our hero, gonna take pollution down to zero.
Coming up next week...
Michelangelo!
You cool, compadres?
You better stay close to us, Michelangelo.
For sure. I'm in Mondo danger, right?
Right. Now let's keep looking.
And we've been teasing this for a while, but we have a very, very special guest joining us on the show. So make sure you come back and tune in to Deuteronomy. In the meantime, like, comment, subscribe, tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell everyone at your local pet shop about Deuteronomy, a Ninja Turtles retread. We'll see you next week. Cowabunga.
Cowabunga.
Deuteronomy is produced by Brian Van Gelder and me, Dan Spitaleri. Brian edits and mixes the show and also designed our show art. Our theme music is composed by Mario Cello Nunez. You can hear more of his music on Spotify, which we've linked to in the show notes. Find us on Twitter at Deuteronomy_TMNT and send email to deuteronomy.tmnt@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Cowabunga! Cowabunga!
When asked to comment, the mayor would only say, "Frankly, we here at City Hall are shell-shocked."